being you know, a person of color, I've had, you know, experiences with the healthcare system in the past, and just being able to, I knew from an early point that I wanted to be a part of that and to make a difference, with healthcare, because, you know, being from the South and everything, there is an inherent distrust of the healthcare system, because as African American people, we haven't been a part of the healthcare system that long, like, you know, since civil rights and everything, which was what, in the 60s, we've only been a part of the healthcare system for about 30 or 40 years. So just, I think, seeing, you know, people that look like you can actually help with the healthcare aspect of going into the hospital. I mean, it's not a good time either way, but that was my part of my motivation as well. You know, just being, you know, something that people could actually see that looks like them, because, you know, the population, especially here in Charleston, is there's a large predominant African American or minority population here that my hospital sees a lot of too. So that was my personal experience that guided me into pursuing medicine, and it's actually something that I've wanted to do ever since I was like in third or fourth grade. So I was kind of aware of that really early on. MUSC has put forth like an initiative to try to get more minorities in medicine. It's something that they've been working on for maybe the past 9 or 10 years, that they've really been recruiting heavily, because out of a class of 170, I think I was one of like, I want to say like 25 minorities. And that includes, you know, the Hispanic culture, as well as African-Americans, like all together. So, and it was even lower than that before. And as you get higher in the ranks, like as you go into residency at MUSC, or you go into attending status, the numbers, like the percentages drop to like maybe 1% or lower, you know, for minorities being represented in, you know, the culture. So they've been putting forth a lot of effort to try to recruit more and be more conscious of diversity. Like their diversity initiative has really put forth a lot of efforts, but we still have a lot of work to do, because, yeah, it's, you don't see a lot of minority attendings often, but it's more than it has been in the past. So I'm grateful for that. Being from South Carolina, I've always been aware of, okay, there's some people that have an old way of thinking. So anytime I approach a patient, I always, you know, come into the room and I always ask, you know, the doctor's coming in, do you mind if I speak with you for a minute before, you know, the doctor comes in? You know, I just read them, and whatever they want to do is what I do. But like I said, I've always had very positive experiences from, you know, all races and cultures. I haven't had any bad experiences that I can think of, like, oh, well, I was just rejected because of the way I looked or anything like that. So I think I've been really blessed. Now, my classmates have some other stories, but I personally have not had any bad experiences with that. So I'm very lucky, I guess. I just didn't like the first 2 years at all. It was just like, it was very mind-boggling, and it was very taxing. And that probably was the biggest challenge for me. Now, third and fourth year, which is where you got to go into the clinics and you got to, you know, have patient interactions and stuff, like third and fourth year, like I had a blast. Like it was a breeze. You know, I was just glad to be out of the classroom and actually like doing something. And I'm a person where if I do something, I can remember it better. Or the first time I see COPD, you know, which is, you know, a disease process, I remember it because I'll never forget that person's face and, you know, the symptoms that they had. So things like that stick with me better rather than sitting and reading about it. But I do understand the reason for sitting and reading about it is, you know, different people learn different ways. And sitting and reading about it and knowing what you're doing before you go before a patient, that makes sense. But then sometimes it's just not, it's just a no-go. It's just like, I'd rather be like having a tooth pulled or something. But yeah, I think that was my biggest challenge the first 2 years, the book work and the extensive testing. Like it was even to the point where I was just like, I had been to like, you know, they sent me to counseling and psychological services, which is a program that we have on campus for students that need to talk to somebody. They tested my IQ and everything to see like, okay, well, Carlton, what's wrong? Like, you know, why aren't you doing well on some of your exams? But you know, the exams are timed and I have like issues with like, you know, things being timed. So it's just like, oh, I'm always feeling like I'm running out of time. And if I get nervous, like I run out of time before my question section ends and then I don't get to complete all the questions and it's a whole dramatic thing. So that was just learning how to test well has been probably my biggest challenge as well. learning how to take an exam. Because I remember when I took my IQ test and stuff with the CATS program, they were just like, oh, your IQ is very high. It's above average. I was like, well, thank you. Now I know, like, no, thank you. People always told me that. I wasn't sure because, you know, my exams weren't showing that. But learning how to accept help, I think, was a big challenge for me, too. Because, like, in high school and college, it was just like, oh, well, you know, I just got good grades. Like, that's just what I do, you know? But then by the time I got to medical school, it was just like, I've never made bad grades before. Like, what is wrong with me? My mom always taught me, like, no matter what you do, where you go, remember that you're talking with, that's somebody's child, you know, or that's somebody's mother, or that's somebody's father, that's somebody's uncle, that's somebody's aunt. So never lose track of that, you know, just because you don't know them or they're new to you or they're being rude. That person means the world to somebody. So that's the way I've always approached all of my patients. And even dealing with my coworkers and my colleagues, from nursing to janitorial staff to anybody, it's just like, that person means something to somebody. So treat them like you would want somebody to treat me, is what my mother and my father always taught me. Just imagine if I was out there and I was receiving care, how you would want somebody to speak with me, how you would want somebody to help me understand. I treat people like I would like to be treated. Now, don't get me wrong. Like, if you, you know, cross me the wrong way and, you know, we have to have a discussion. But, you know, I always try to keep that in the back of my mind and not to react so quickly to things when people do stuff. And especially with people and the population of people that are in medicine that I come in contact with. Like, in South Carolina, if you're at MUSC, you're probably some of the sickest people in the state of South Carolina. So that's what I think about, like, okay, you may snap at me, but then, you know, you just got diagnosed with stage 4 lung cancer. So I understand. I'll give you a pass, you know. I can't really afford to have a bad day if your child was just diagnosed with leukemia. So I can't really come in here with a nasty attitude because, you know, I had a rough time getting to work this morning. That's just not going to work. So I always try to check my attitude at the door. And when I'm working, I'm working. And I'm more conscious of it. Like I said, I try to treat people the way I want to be treated in my real life. But I'm more lenient with my behavior in my real life versus when I'm at work, I'm being paid to do a job. I need to be professional. And like I said, if your mother just got diagnosed with ovarian cancer, you're not going to really care if I had a flat tire this morning. You just need somebody there to explain things to you and to just be a person to show that they actually do care. You know, being a person in medicine or being hard and callous towards, you know, a family that wants to hold on to their mom in the ICU. Although, you know, from a medical standpoint, there's nothing else that we can do, but I can't be upset with them or mad or try to push them, because if that was my mom, of course I would want to just hold on to them. But, you know, I'm not sure the earth can rotate without her being here. You know, I mean, logically I know that, but then your heart doesn't know that all the time, and your heart and mind separate sometimes, and it's hard. So just, I always try to keep that in mind and give people the time that they need to get through things. So I think that's what I like to treat people the way I would want to be treated. I did a rotation of radiation oncology, and at the end of the 3 weeks, it drained me. Like, because if you get caught up in every case, and you want to be caught up in every case, but physically it's hard on you as a human being, you know, having to deal with something the everyday, and that's why I couldn't do pediatrics, because children just take my heart to a whole nother level. So I was just like, just being in like a pediatric ICU, like I could just cry every day. But, you know, physically that's not good for your body. So I think a lot of physicians have built a defense mechanism to try to keep themselves on the business aspect of it. This is, we're going to do this, this, and this. I'm sorry, but you know, there's nothing else we can do. And they just try to walk away before they get too emotionally involved, which I'm not sure is a horrible thing for the physician, but it's not good for the patient. So I think you have to have a balance between, you know, protecting yourself from, like, you know, physically breaking down versus, okay, this is the hardest day of somebody's life. And I'm not sure I have the balance yet, but I'm always trying to keep that in mind. But then realistically, you have to, like, keep yourself, because, you know, I'm not a crier, but when I do cry, like, I'm a real ugly crier, you know, it's very, you know, it's a whole process, and I'm physically tired afterwards. So it's just like, I couldn't do this like all the time, or I could die. So, like I said, I think it's a balance though. Just letting people know that you care or know that you understanding, versus, you know, having to go into a whole ugly cry situation and all that. But I'm sure it's a skill I'll just try to perfect as I move forward in my career. I'm still kind of early on, so.
Inside Stories is an oral narratives project that catalogs the stories of medical students during their journeys through medical school. The podcast is hosted on In Training, the online magazine for medical students. Visit us at in-training.org/inside-stories. Inside Stories is a founding member of Vocalis, the podcast network for medical students. Please listen to our partner podcasts at vocalisnetwork.wix.com/listen.